Good evening, Dark City. Welcome to the Permaculture Show. Here we are again. I'm in the zone. I'm ready to talk permaculture. I've got Bob with me here again this evening. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Norris. Hi, everybody else out there.
Hello. Are you ready to talk permaculture?
Certainly am.
Excellent. Okay, well, I thought we'd have a chat about the rest of the principles. That was my original intention two shows ago, except I came to the first one, which is observe and interact. And then when I pondered on observation, it kind of warranted a long ramble, which is what happened. Yeah, so I won't go too much into that one, but obviously interaction is connected with that. You know, I've got a nice little quote here actually from David Holmgren. Unless we get out there and open our eyes and use our hands and hearts, all the ideas in the world will not save us. So, which pretty much says it all, really. You know, once we've got that observation there and that knowledge, we can then sort of process the right ways to go about interacting with it to our benefit, but in harm to nothing else. So that's the first one. There's 12 in total. The second one is catch and store energy. Again, you see, this is why the sort of the observation process, you know, it permeates into all of these, because when you've observed your site, you know, things like water, you will notice where water gathers, and add to that system to make it productive for yourself and productive for the rest of the living things that are in it. And you can then begin to look at the inputs and outputs and start to link them together into spirals, not circles. I've started my spiral picture, Bob, by the way.
Yay!
Well, it was a picture I'd already started with the flower of life on, and then I didn't know what to put between them, and it was spirals. That was what it was waiting for, so it's in progress.
Well, I look forward to seeing that.
Yes, I must get on that. Right, so the third one then is obtaining a yield, which obviously, you know, that we do need that, however beautiful it is to contribute to this wonderful process of nature and, you know, interacting that way. You know, we have got to eat at the end of the day. we do need that. So, you know, when you're putting these systems in place, you've got to be thinking about how you can get the maximum yield. You know, you've got to think in practical terms as well, which leads on to the next one, which is
Norris.
Yes.
Before we jump into the next one, I think it would be worth mentioning that the yield isn't just for self gain.
Yes.
The yield for a space is how everything gains out of it. So, for instance, if you're providing plants that attract aphids, and the aphids then attract ladybird larvae, etc., etc., that's the yield. And it's not just about the odd carrot you might pull out of the ground or potatoes. It's how the whole ecosystem has benefited through your efforts.
Yeah. And well, it keeps the balance and the flow, doesn't it? So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I'm rushing a bit. Oh, you've just calmed me down there. I think I was rushing a bit then. Just relax. So the next one is apply self-regulation and accept feedback, which is so important, because it's how you learn, isn't it? You know,
it's the only way.
And I mean, you see that in nature, don't you? You know, the earth self-regulates, doesn't it? You know, it is the realm of effects, as they say. So, and obviously the more you do this, when you do come to put a particular design in place, the likelihood is that it's going to be right for that place, and not be at odds with it. It is what the others do.
I think probably another good thing at this point would be, don't worry about whether it's right or not, because nature will put it right. So if you've made a mistake, it isn't the end of the world.
Definitely. Well, it's a constant learning process, isn't it? You know, I mean, when sort of people come and chat to me who want a garden and have never gardened before, you know, it's a bit like the whole propagation thing. You know, people kind of have this fear almost of it. But, you know, I always say the best way to learn is just to do it, you know. And it's one of those things that you could never know the whole of it, really. And I don't know if you'd want to, because it wouldn't be so magical then, would it?
Absolutely. No, definitely. Getting your hands dirty, it's the only way.
Yeah. Well, it's that whole thing, isn't it, about sort of working with nature rather than fighting against it.
There's no point fighting against it, because ultimately nature will win.
Yeah, true. Yes, she's certainly mightier than us, I should say.
I was watching a programme on tsunamis today, so yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah. That's why I was so inspired as well by, what's his name, Bob? You know, the guy who, the garbage warrior. You've met him, haven't you?
Oh, we did this the other day, didn't we?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Mr. Earthship.
Yeah. But that he was the guy that went into places that had tsunamis and built these amazing homes that, you know, they were just devastated places. But actually interacted with what was there to kind of build up the cycle again. It's phenomenal. I really must work harder on naming my sources. I'm rubbish.
We can put in a link to Earthships and to that particular film in the podcast. So.
Definitely, yes. I did post
everyone
it in the
can go and check it out.
Yeah, it's really worth watching. I think I don't like the title. I don't, Garbage Warrior. I don't.
Well, the whole reason people use titles like that is so that it becomes sensationalist. Mm. You know, if people are thinking, "Oh, Garbage Warrior," then yeah, they might go and check it out, but the beauty of it is they won't get what they're expecting.
True, yes. That's what happened to me.
There you go.
Okay, so if we move on to the next one. Can't remember what number it is now. It doesn't really matter. It's use and value renewable resources and services. So you're using what you've got, basically. I mean, I think it's there's a lot available in an urban, I mean, mostly my experience is an urban area and what I can, you know, I'm like suck a womble, really. Just go around collecting stuff. I've lost my train of thought now.
Well, I think on that particular point that people throw a huge amount of stuff away, you know, not necessarily you or me or people we might know, but in general, an amazing amount of stuff's just thrown away. And out of that, most of us can survive on it.
Mm.
So we can pretty much, you know, build and adapt and repair, renew, reuse pretty much for free, most things. You might have to wait a little while, but it's not the same as going down to the shop and going, oh, right, I can buy that right away. But if you intention it, often what you need comes along.
Yeah. No, yeah, that does happen, actually. Yeah, that's really weird you say that, because around the corner from my house, someone's chucked out a load of bricks, you know, from a storage heater. So I've made a little cold frame in the garden, and it's half full of storage heater bricks, because they obviously keep the heat really well. So I'm going to go around, and I've just been pondering whether to do it.
Well, my whole fireplace at home is lined with the heat storage bricks from storage heaters, and my little converted Caligas bottle wood stove heats these bricks up, and then overnight they give the heat out again.
Yeah, they're fabulous, fabulous things, and you find they get just totally discarded. It's crazy.
Well, most people don't know what to do with things.
No. You know, well, a lot of people just don't have that kind of thought, do they? I think it's just
They're too left.
And obviously, yeah. It's, I don't know. I suppose like the whole mentality for a lot of people these days is, it's, if it's not bought from a shop with money, then it's not worth having. Oh,
well,
great.
Luckily for the rest of us, that's our game.
Yeah. Well, I'd really like to. I'm hoping up at our allotment eventually we'll be able to have sort of almost like a little recycling centre where literally people, because everything we can use, you know, bottles, glass jars, that sort of stuff, old windows, anything like that, that people can just bring and leave there, and then they can be used for various projects. I'm really hoping to get some group building projects going on up there.
I think that's a really, really good idea. The hardest thing is not letting that over the allotment.
Around here that, you know, I think could benefit from being able to sort of access that kind of thing and learn an actual skill. So anyway, that's part of my grand plan. It's on my to-do list, Bob.
Everything will come in its right time. So the fact that you're intentioning it already.
I used to read my tarot cards for years. I just used to read my own ones sort of on festivals, really, when I was contemplating. And I never used to say anything except just calm down and wait and see. For years, that's all they ever say. So don't bother doing them anymore, because that's what they always tell me.
Does that mean you haven't learned, or that you have?
Well, obviously, I haven't done them for a while now. So, yes, maybe I should get them out again and see. Yeah, it'd be interesting. I'd quite like to have my aura photographed again, actually, because years ago I had that photographed and I thought it would be like blue and green and all lovely, and it was like orange and cerise and really like yes,
that's good.
They're good
energy colors.
Yeah, she explained it to me. Yeah, she did explain it to me, but you see, then I didn't know where to focus the energy, which got me into trouble, but now I do. No, it's all right. Well,
I think that's true of many of us.
It's it definitely takes a lot of pondering. I'd love to be a philosopher. To say, you know, it'd be great, wouldn't it? I'd just like to sit on a rock all day, really, going,
You'll end up looking like that thing in the middle of Copenhagen Harbour.
I'll probably just get moss growing over me and stuff. That'd be quite good, actually. Natural. That keep the sun off me. I can't take too much sun. So the natural resources are the other thing worth mentioning on this one, because obviously, you know, monocrop farms are a good example of that, where the cycle's completely broken. Money's just pumped into it, and you know, it's just dead. There's nothing there except the earth naturally provides resources that, if you work with, benefit you, and carry on that spiral. I'm trying to stop saying circle and say spiral instead.
That's a really good example, monocrop cultures, mm-hmm. because the only way that that is continuable is to keep replacing what those crops require. Mm-hmm. So if you're not rotating, in other words, putting crops in that replace or repair what the previous crop has done, then of course you're going to have to spend money on it, because how else are you going to deal with the depletion?
Exactly. And of course it's the same with the kind of, any insect problems or...
Well, the thing is with insects and stuff, it's never a problem, is it? You've provided a really good environment for them. I mean, how's that a problem for them? It isn't. What you need to do is provide an environment where the controls are in place. So that, if there is loads of aphids, you've got ladybirds. You know, they love to eat aphids. You know, it's made in heaven for them.
Exactly. And then obviously things like GMO as well, because, it's just broken cycle all the way through, isn't it? Because that film I watched, I mean, even with GMOs, they're having to spray them still.
Of course.
Yeah,
I mean, a genetically modified plant, when you put it in the land, will not stop everything else growing around it, although if they spliced in rhododendron genes, it probably would.
Rhododendrons, don't you, Bob?
No, they're good in the right place.
No, I'm with you. There are a lot in the sort of the old woodlands that we've got around here, and there's a lot of them that... kind of taking over. It's awful.
Well, they put toxins into the soil to prevent other things growing. Not only do they crowd them out, shading the light, they deliberately prevent other things growing.
Yeah. Well, I suppose what it is the kind of ancient woods that we've got in Birmingham, that generally there would have been a manor house. Which is why they're still here to this day. So they're obviously the kind of households that back in the day are into that kind of stuff.
I think generally when we had loads of ancient woodland, there would have been a few what are called turf roof roundhouses in the woods. The manor houses came afterwards when they found that they could actually put fences around it all.
Yeah. Mind you, my local wood's quite into... Have I told you the story of how the people own the wood down the road from me?
No.
Have I not? So, I have to tell, I do repeat myself quite a lot, so please tell me if I am doing it, because it's irritating. basically, when I was sort of looking, doing the whole observation process, and like we were talking about with diversity, looking at the green areas that were nearby, and there's this very old woodland, and then I kind of got sidetracked into the history of it, and I think it was, I'm going to get these facts wrong as well, probably.
Well, often it
that was very light.
Sorry, Norris, I was just it's filling in for your...
It's okay. No, I'm
just saying that
well,
often the facts that people do reel out aren't right in the first place.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I'll just carry on being vague. Yeah, I heard something somewhere once. But yeah, anyway, yeah, so this guy was the owner of a glass factory, and sort of even at that point in time, he could see it being bought up and built on. And yeah, so he rallied a board of trustees. So yeah, it's pretty much free land, I would say. Obviously,
now there's actually a really interesting concept. What does that mean, free land?
Well, this is it. This is it. I mean, I started to sort of delve into it, but obviously, I can't go into the whole law thing because then I lose focus on the permaculture thing. So I kind of delve into it when it becomes relevant. Yeah, I did look into it a little bit, and they can actually pass bylaws, the Board of Trustees. And they have managed to siphon off part of it and say, yeah, that bit is owned by the council somehow. But yeah, I mean, it's the concept is really worth delving in, especially in a situation like that.
Well, the thing with this concept of free land, if the land is free, how has any voted for authority able to say that it is not free? I mean, none of that makes sense at all. I mean, I don't know how it is in the rest of the world, but here in the UK, we've got councils at the minute that are, I don't know the best way to put it really, disposing of public assets and putting them into private pockets. And I find this a really, really disturbing thing, because at the end of the day, a local council are supposed to be looking after all the assets in their charge to our best interest. And that includes land, that includes buildings, schools, and they are clearly, clearly not doing that.
Have you had a look at the Localism Act, Bob?
We've been trying to work with that with our local art centre and,
yes.
You know, getting the asset registered so that it's available for a community buyout.
Mm.
But our local council, instead of the asset being not used for 5 years, which most councils do, ours decided that the cut-off point was 2 years.
Oh. Mm.
So they're refusing to allow it to be registered, therefore preventing the community buying the asset, which is a really, really difficult thing. I mean, in the case of the asset, our art centre, it was covenanted to the community by the Shirley family in perpetuity.
Right.
Now, to me, that means forever. And the council decided that the covenant isn't worth the paper it's written on. Now, this is the Shelley family we're talking about. I mean, you know who I'm talking about, do you?
No, I'm not familiar with them, actually.
Mary Shelley, Frankenstein, Percy Shelley.
Right, sorry, yes, I'm with you. Yeah.
Right, well, they all lived around near me. And obviously were a wealthy, wealthy family. And all of everything they had, they've left to the community. Their manor house, the park, the schools they built, everything.
Fabulous.
And they obviously knew what councils were like, even then.
Yeah,
you know, we're talking about 1880, 1890. And they knew that councils were well, sharks. Actually, even that's too good. That's a real downer on sharks. I'm sorry, sharks.
No, I'll just call them the others.
That's a nice, benign term.
With no energy going that way. They're just
them over there.
But yeah, I mean, I'm talking to the council. I mean, our council's quite small, and there's got to be a breaking point. I mean, I think they're trying to suppress the right to bidding, and we tried to talk to them about neighbour plans, and they were just all, oh, they're really expensive. Yeah, they're really expensive to do neighbourhood plans. But fortunately, I've got this councillor friend who was having all this trouble and has stood down as a Labour candidate, and he's now independent. But she's been I'm trying to get her to come on, actually, to chat about it, because I think people will find it interesting the way she's been treated. I mean, they've just... It's a long story, but, yeah, she's very knowledgeable on all this. So, yeah, when she steps down, we're going we're gonna take over. in a friendly way, obviously. So that was a complete tangent, that was. I've got more principles. I want to finish them by 8:30 so we can talk about design.
You carry on then, you've got 2 minutes.
Yeah, I better hurry up. Well, obviously, we can come back to these, because I think all of these, I mean, they're not set in stone, and different groups that you come across have, you know, sort of chatted on them and had slightly different interpretations. So, you know. But yeah, the next one anyway is design from patterns to details, which is what we've already touched on, which is your observations, you know, slope, prevailing wind, where your aspect, where the sun is, and then using, you know, encompassing that into your design details. Integrate rather than segregate, which I think did we chat about that the other week? I think we did. Well, we've touched on it loads, because that's another one that kind of permeates into everything else. Small and slow solutions is the other one, which is great, and it's great to get your head round, rather than, you know, thinking you've got this massive design to produce. You know, just literally start just outside your front door and go from there.
I think, Nairis, a good way of looking at it is that we're actually working with nature rather than against it. And yes, nature has been around as long as the planet, and we don't need to rush it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It does. It takes time. Which is what I think we were talking about that last week, about my little patch outside that I've been just tending, and it is a little evolution in itself, because, you know, you establish the ground cover like I have there with what was already there, the clover and the violas, and I mean, they just die back in winter, and then I mulch over them, and then they come through, you know, in spring, and if they get a bit too rampant before I get taller things established, then just rip it out, and then I bother, it just grows again. It's just, you know, just so easy. It's the it's all about the observation and the diversity, which is the next one, use and value diversity, which is why I sort of chatted about diversity last week, because that kind of really, you know, goes hand in hand with the observation, I think, personally. And then the last one is use edges and value the marginal, which I think we have touched on before. I think we mentioned last week, because Felipe, who we had on a few weeks ago, talked about it as well, which is, you know, where two ecosystems meet is often the most productive place, you know, and, you know, I think that pertains to anything, really. You know, it's where things are exchanged. You could talk about that in terms of people or, you know, plants, microbes, animals, energy, anything, you know, it's where another spiral starts, isn't it, Bob? That's what it is.
That's absolutely right. And You're dead right to say it's a place where energy is exchanged, and that is kind of what a lot of people get worried about, because it's part of change. And this is what most people don't get, that change is a really good thing.
Yeah, definitely. Adapting to change is, because everything is constantly, it is the realm of effects. That's truly what it is, this realm, you know. You know, you do one thing and that kind of ripples on.
I guess really it's not create the space to change, for the change to happen, but be the change.
Yes, definitely.
Because that way you're leading it rather than it leading you.
Definitely. It goes back, doesn't it, to that David Holmgren quote earlier about, you know, that observation and that conscious interaction, you know. If you've got that level of awareness and that focus, then everyone knows the right thing to do pretty much. Obviously, there's kind of, you know, the psychopath section that might not have that capability. But, you know, in general, most people do. Even people that don't do the right thing still know what the right thing to do is, really.
Going back to watching that program on tsunamis, I mean, you're talking about people know basically the right things to do. Well, given the power of nature, I'm absolutely gobsmacked that the majority of humanity lives by the ocean. It's got to be probably the most dangerous place on the planet.
Yeah. Again, like you were saying, and you were saying this last week, it's the lure of where two edges meet, Bob. That's what it is.
Well, it's easy, isn't it? Because it's more abundant.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because, yeah. Yeah.
But in that is where the danger lies.
That's true. Yeah. I was going to make a really good point then. It's totally gone.
Go on then.
It's gone. It happens when my microphone clicks off as well. That's when I make all of my best points. Okay, so yeah, I mean, that obviously, so that's pretty much the principles, but we can maybe come back to them at a later date, depending on who we have on and what they're chatting about. I have got a few guests lined up for the next couple of weeks, so
I think it's worth dipping in and out of that all the time anyway.
Definitely. Well, I just wanted to sort of run through them, really, to kind of, in fact, I have got them written down online somewhere. I'll post that up somewhere so people can have a look. On to the design then, really. Only 5 minutes later than I was intending. No, 20 minutes, isn't it? We've got to finish for 5 minutes.
No, 20 left.
Yeah, we've got 20 left, right. And I've got to ask questions. I've got to make sure we ask questions, Bob, towards the end. My mum told me off.
Well, let's hope you get a few people call in then, eh? I mean, yeah. I don't know whether you've given the numbers out. I'm happy to do it if you'd like me to.
Yes, you can do. I'm rubbish at that sort of stuff. Yeah, please do.
Okay, well, if any of you out there want to join in, you can join us on Skype. And you need to hook up with us on Bob's Backyard. You can landline us. If you're in the UK, that's 0161-298-0298. If you're outside the UK, you can still landline us. And that's 0044-161-298-0298. And our production team, the beautiful people there, will hook you up with us. So I guess the design, that's going to be the difficult bit. Once you've got the principles on board, which kind of you got to allow nature to get into your psyche, with the principles. It's Definitely. Not quite looking at it in black and white. It's a bit grayer than that.
Well, yes, I was going to mention sectoring, Bob, which really does kind of, well, personally, I would say that's your kind of the culmination of your observation of a piece of land, because that's all the things we sort of talked about in the last few shows, really, and why we said that ideally you would observe a site for a year so you can then kind of either have a map of your site or record in some kind of way the tracking of the sun through the year and your microclimates and literally anything, any observation, as much on there as possible, really. And then I suppose zones is the other kind of big one, which is looked at in terms of five zones. I'm going to have to whip through them quite quickly, aren't I? Because, yeah, we need to do longer on this, really.
We can always come back to them.
Yeah, I'm starting to rush again. What is that tonight? I don't know. Just relax. I'm no good at planning time. I can't do that. I don't like to think of things in terms of time. That's what it is. I don't believe in the linear. No, I'm trying to ignore the linear world as much as possible.
In terms of permaculture, the vertical is the better.
Yes, that is true. Yeah, have to try. I'm practicing trying to fly. So, okay. So zones. So you've got zone zero. That's your first one. Which is, well, the house or the home centre, or depending on what you're doing, it could be your greenhouse at your allotment or a community centre, you know, the place where kind of all the sort of human action is happening. And in terms of permaculture there, it would really be your energy needs, your water needs, perhaps sunlight, and so really creating a productive environment from the very centre. Then zone one, which is nearest to the house, so it all fans out from there, that's nearest to the house. And you would tend to put in those positions crops that you would want to tend to most often or harvest most often. So salad crops, herb plants, maybe strawberries, or even depend, you know, obviously it's only a guideline because it's all down to the individual. So it depends on how you want your system to work. So it could be that there's a greenhouse there, perhaps with cuttings, you know. I'm quite lucky because I've got a conservatory, so I can have all my seedlings in the conservatory. So literally when I get up in the morning, I just come straight in here. Look at the babies and see how they're doing. So, you know, and you can give them a lot of energy then, can't you?
Well, that's exactly what I was about to say then, that interaction is really, really important.
Definitely.
I mean, plants are amazing and they want to help you. They grow to help you. And the more you can interact with them, the more they will tune in to what it is you need.
Yeah, it's amazing. okay, so then we've got zone two, which is used for sort of perennial plants and things that need less maintenance, perhaps just, you know, occasional weed control, although, as we've said before, haven't we, Bob, ideally you'd get to a point where you've either mulched or ground covered and suppressed growth of other plants, shall we say, or things that are growing there you've actually got a use for and you will be cropping anyway. So what else? Zone, there's more for zone two, isn't there? She's Orchard, well, Sassy. Yeah.
Zone 4, you'll get out towards Orchard, aren't you? You know, fruit trees in woodland. So they require almost no work whatsoever. In fact, permaculture in general requires very little work in terms of, you know, digging and weeding and all the rest of it. The main bit of work is the planning.
Yeah, definitely.
And then living with it.
Well, ideally, it's the smallest amount of work for the highest yield, isn't it? So then we've got zone 3, which is where your main crops are grown. So, you know, on a personal level for your domestic use, or, you know, trade or whatever you might be doing with them. And again, I mean, even here, you know, after establishment, if you've, as you say, Bob, if you've got your plan right and your observation right, then the maintenance there should be fairly minimal, maybe once a week, you know. And then sort of you go into zone 4, which is a semi-wild area. So it could perhaps be used for forage, collecting wild food, coppicing, timber production. And then your last zone, zone 5, which is your wild area. So there's really no human intervention in zone 5.
Ooh,
apart from, well,
be
no,
very careful.
I haven't finished. Well, it brings it back to observation, doesn't it? So, you know, you can use zone 5 for observation.
We're getting into agenda 21 terminology here.
Oh, no.
No.
In what way?
No human intervention. Oh. No humans allowed. Get back to your habitation corridor. You have no rights here.
No, that's the observation area. That's the place where...
This is how Agenda 21 came into being. It was picking up on all the good things that we all do and turning it into a set of rules that are against humanity.
Yeah.
So we have to be really careful with words, because words are spells, aren't they?
Oh,
we're taught how to spell them.
Yeah. I know. It's a really heavy one, that, because I can only think about words for so long, and then my head feels like it's going to explode.
For spells.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm really bad at spelling as well, but which I always used to get moaned at when I was a kid, and now I kind of believe it's some kind of protection.
It absolutely is, yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I make up my own words as well, because, you know.
Well, why shouldn't you?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's your spelling.
Yes, exactly. But that's, yes, I've listened to Darren Geoghegan, a couple of his talks. I quite like what he has to say on that kind of thing. It's interesting, definitely. Right then. Well, yeah. So what would your definition of zone 5 be then, Bob?
A natural area.
Mm.
You know, I wouldn't say there would be no human intervention, because we're part of nature.
True.
You know, we're no different to anything else that lives on this planet.
Well,
except that we've been granted the grace of being a guardian species. And that's the one thing that most of us don't grasp.
Yeah,
everything's here for the benefit of us, but we are here for the benefit of everything else equally.
It's a very ingrained mindset, isn't it? But I suppose, you know, if people are so removed from nature, then, you know, it's another break in the cycle, isn't it, in the spiral.
I think that they're not removed from it willingly. I think that a lot of this is done through indoctrination, through education. Willingly, people want to be part of it. Why wouldn't you?
I meant to start writing a list. I said I was going to start writing lists when I was speaking to you for things for me to ponder on later.
A list.
My spider diagram. I like spider diagrams. Well, maybe I could start doing spider. But anyway, yeah. That's
it's hard on the radio.
I'm speaking out loud. Stop that. Right. So I don't think, there are a lot of these acronyms for the design process and ways of working through what information you've collected, but I don't think we've got enough time to start going into that now, so I think we'll save that one for another day. I don't know if we've got, just over 5 minutes. I don't know if, did we get Miles or anyone that wanted to chat about there? I thought it might be nice if people talk about what they're growing and, you know, relate it to the permaculture design process. Is there anyone? Anyone who's got any questions? No?
No, there's nothing coming out of the green room. However, I really, really think people need to investigate herbs of all sorts, because they are unbelievably powerful plants and they're here totally for our benefit.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, I mean, I just, I try to get as many herbs in there as possible. And in fact, we have got some suppliers around here. There's a local guy, him and his partner, they grow them locally. They've got Polytunnel. Have some really nice stuff they had. What was it? Pineapple sage.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, it smells absolutely amazing.
It's not indigenous, but it's a good thing to keep under control.
Well, to be honest, it did die actually, because it wasn't very hardy. I must go and get another one. But I've started propagated a load of rosemary. That propagates pretty well, doesn't it, Bob?
Oh, easily, yeah. You just break a bit off and shove it in the soil. And 9 times out of 10, it will root.
Yeah. And all those lavenders, which I just shoved in the ground, I was saying last week, they're looking okay at the moment. They're still looking pretty perky and stuff, so I'm quite hopeful that they'll take.
You're going to be the lavender queen.
Yeah. Well, we've got this crazy idea, you see, because to actually make lavender oil, you can sort of do it at home. It's a fairly simple process, isn't it? You have a big saucepan with a bowl in the middle, and then the lavender flowers around. Put the water in, boil it, and then you have an upturned lid, like, so it's concaved, and you can add the ice. You add ice on top so that the water condenses and then the oil collects in the middle. So we kind of had this crazy idea of collecting and producing local lavender oil. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah. And obviously, potentially have a lot of the local sort of health benefits, like we've talked about before with honey and that kind of thing. So, that's another one that's on my to-do list.
Generally, what you have to do is inspire others.
Yes, that is true.
Because for all the ideas we come up with on these shows, practically there isn't enough time for us to do them. And I guess that's why we're doing the shows, isn't it, really?
Oh, definitely, definitely, yeah. just to spread the word and get people inspired and then get other people on that are doing fantastic things. In fact, yeah, I think we're drawing to a close now, so it's a good point to mention. I'm going to pronounce their names wrong now. I've got, you know, the guys from Karuna are hopefully coming on next week. So it's Jan Tevin, her name, I'm not sure how to pronounce. And possibly their son, because I know their kids had a big part in developing their space there. It's in Church Stretton. So, so they're coming on, all being well, next week to chat about what they do. So that should be a really, because they're very inspiring. I think they planted something like, what was it? This is another fact I'm going to get wrong now. 400 trees? I think it was something crazy like that. A family of four. Not single-handedly, there's four of them, but you know what I mean. So, looking forward to having those guys on.
Oh, I should look forward to hearing that as well.
Yeah, same time, same place next week, Bob.
Well,
please join us. And everyone else as well, obviously. All right, then. Well, I think that's pretty much it. So, thanks ever so much for joining me, Bob, and thanks to all the Dark City crew, we'll be here again next week.
All right, Nairis, you have a really good week, and I look forward to catching up with you during the week and next week's show as well.
Yeah, fantastic, yeah. So join us again next week.
Have a good week, people.
Bye.